Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Everything you remember must mean something. So what does that thought mean?
Adrift with Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
All right, week four of Annabelle's maternity leave, and this week, filling her seat, broadcaster, podcaster, author, polymath, is that a word I used when you were on the radio show, perhaps?
I think it might have been.
Is it over-egging the pudding to call you a polymath?
I think it probably is. I think polymaths are people like Da Vinci.
Right.
And I cannot bracket myself with Da Vinci.
That's for other people to do.
Yeah. Listen, if you want to, Jeff, you go right ahead.
It's Rick Edwards. Rick has a new book, which is a spin-off from his podcast, Science-ish. The book is The Peculiar Science Behind the Movies. And also, the first thing I wanted to do was apologise, because since you've got here, you caught me in a funny mood when you got here, and since you've been here, which is about 10, 15 minutes, you've had a full assessment of my various financial woes. So
I've really, it's nice to get to know, you know, the the money behind the man.
Rick came in and said, oh, I like your house. And instead of just taking the compliment, I felt the need to try and prove that I don't deserve a good house and things are going to go terribly wrong quite soon.
I am now sort of low level worried about you. But it is a really nice house.
Thank you.
So it swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Yeah. So that apology out of the way. What I had to tell you first, which I hope will be exciting to you. So Annabelle had a baby a few weeks ago.
Congratulations, Annabelle.
And she's just sitting around. You know, you don't have kids, do you?
No, I don't actually. No, we quite like them.
Right.
In fact, I met a very cute one the other day, and then I told my wife about it, and she said, well, come home and let's get on with making one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where were you at the time? Did you proceed directly
home?
Yeah,
I curtailed the evening. I went home quicker than I would have done otherwise.
Is she monitoring her ovulation?
No, I don't think we're at that level yet.
Because that can get quite depressing when you're trying to do it in a sort of mechanical fashion.
Yeah, scheduling in.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're... I mean, maybe we will do some of that. I think that's quite sort of par for the course, isn't it?
I think so. Have you ever had your sperm count done?
No, I'm going to go and get it done. I found a place where I'm going to get the full checks, not just count, but like is everything in working order? Because
you seem to me like a man who we had to do IVF because I have immotile sperm, and I feel like I'm the kind of person that evolution is trying to weed out of the gene pool. I think you are the opposite of that. I mean, you look like you would have strong genes.
Well, thank you. I mean, I guess you can't really tell. There's certain things you can tell about the phenotype, about the genotype rather from the phenotype. But
I'm sitting here pretending I know the difference between the
just
two.
Just like what you look like. So like your sort of physical manifestation. Mm-hmm. You could have some guesses about your genes, but not that much. And it really wouldn't be. I worry that I might have the old immotile sperm.
Really? But evolution is all survival of the fittest, and you are one of the fittest.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Listen, once I've had everything checked out, I'll let you know.
Would you like me to come with you?
Do you mind?
It can be an intimidating experience.
Is it the sort of thing that you want to have someone to hold your hand with?
Probably not. It's depressing. They hand over a brown envelope with source material in it for you to seek inspiration. Yeah. And I do think it's fertility clinics which are propping up the magazine pornography industry.
Yeah, because actually, like, no one is going into a newsagent's and buying Razzle anymore, are
they? No.
Literally no one.
I've got a depressing story about this, which is, so when we were doing the IVF, I would, with some regularity, have to produce samples.
Yeah.
especially when to the bit where we were doing the rounds and what have you. So instead of using the hospital's own source material, I thought I'll bring my laptop with me. But I didn't like the idea that anybody would perhaps steal my laptop and then find all this filth on it. So I made a special folder called, in block capitals, For Fertility Clinic, so that if anybody was to access my computer and find the filth, they think, oh, he's got quite a legitimate reason for having it there.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's one of the great smoke screens. If only, what's his name? Damien Green. Is that his name?
That is his name.
If only, no, just create a For Fertility Clinic folder, Damien. You've got no problems. Be as extreme as you like.
So we got onto that because I was telling you, so Annabelle's got this four-week-old baby.
Yes.
And often when they're that small, all you can really do is sit around holding them because they don't want to be put down and they'll only sleep on you, which is the situation she finds herself in. So she got to a point where she figured out she could watch quiz shows from 12:30 until tea time. She could just sit there the entire... There is a way of, I guess, different stepping stone quiz shows getting all the way to tea time from lunchtime.
Yeah.
And it was becoming a problem for her. So she decided not to go cold turkey, but just to keep one quiz show. The one she chose to keep was Impossible.
Honestly, that's the nicest feedback I've had. maybe about anything I've ever done. I'm really chuffed because it means that she's foregoing, for example, Tenable with Warwick Davis, which I know starts at 3 straight after Impossible.
Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port. Everything that you always wanted in a friend that was with you all the time. Anytime. Right now. Happening. Right now.
So please share your stories of social ineptitude. You can email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. This first one came from Benedict from Munich. And I didn't print out Benedict's surname, but it had one of those. I don't know what it's called. It's a German character. Mm. And it looks a bit like a big letter B.
It's called an S set.
S set.
Yeah, it's like a double S.
It's so great.
Mm, it's a beautiful letter.
Do you not feel that post-Brexit we should get a few more letters just to cheer everybody up and make us feel a little bit more cosmopolitan and outward looking?
It wouldn't hurt, would it?
Just a few umlauts here and there.
Yeah, definitely crowbar an S set in.
Yeah.
I've realised that the last time I said S set would have been when I was doing German GCSE. It's a long time ago. It might not be quite
I was
that.
So impressed.
Yeah, yeah. I was, when I pulled it out, I was like, I know that. And now I'm immediately doubting myself. And so if it isn't called that, just be kind, please.
Benedict says, since uncomfortable situations with neighbours are particularly embarrassing, I have to share with you one that just happened to me last week. So one evening, I was awaiting a delivery at around 9 a.m. I left the pub with friends earlier to make sure I was home when the package arrived. I was home on time. I sat on the couch and read a book. Surprisingly, the announced delivery man did not show up. For some reason, I decided to take a nap on the couch. When 10 minutes later, the doorbell rang. So I got up, went to the door, opened it, and there it was. Still a little dizzy in my head, I mumbled, "Where do I have to sign?" whilst looking up. After the guy stared at me for a really long and awkward 2 seconds that it took to recognise his face, I slowly began to realise that this was actually my neighbour. As quick as I could, I followed up with some distracting questions and tried to look surprised, but I'm dead sure that this did not really help the situation. I shut the door as quick as possible to escape the situation. Still, this has been haunting me for quite a few days now. That I think it is bad to mistake your neighbour for a delivery man, and I speak with some degree of experience on this.
I think it's very, very poor, Benedict. I don't know how you get out of that at all.
Are you good with faces?
I'm good with faces. I'm terrible with names.
Right, I'm quite bad.
Actually,
with both.
No. Do you know what? I know. I'm totally overstated my own ability there. I think I'm bad with both to the extent that my wife has outlawed me now from ever saying "Hi, I'm Rick" to anyone.
Right.
I have to say "Nice to see you."
That's what I do all the time.
I have to, because I had so many instances with her friends.
Yeah.
Crucially, I've got a real blind spot on her parents' friends. I just can't recognise them. I don't know.
How many of these people are you interacting with? Parents,
too many, clearly.
It is. You're getting some relationships. These people are never in your orbit. I could name off the top of my head a dozen of my in-laws' friends. Why do I know those people?
Yeah,
well, I don't need to know them.
I couldn't, but apparently I should be able to. Yeah.
I do this thing. If I'm ever introduced to somebody and they say, have you met before? I say, yeah, I think we have, just in case we have, because then it puts the awkwardness on the other person.
I do a bit of that as well. And I think it's quite good.
Do you know about prosopagnosia?
No.
Face blindness. So at one end of the spectrum, you've got people who would see you and say, oh, I think I saw you on the London to Manchester train 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got people who work in an office, and if they see their boss in the corridor, they wouldn't recognize him because he's out of context. And you know, I'm at the bad end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But I went and got tested at the University College of London. They're doing research into this, and you can go and get tested, and then the next time it happens to you, you can say, I'm sorry, I have a condition, and make them feel bad.
I don't need the test. I'm just going to say I've got it.
Yeah.
I'm going to
make a certificate.
Write that down for me.
Yeah, really. Prosopagnosia.
Hokey looking certificate.
This comes from Tina Melfjord in Norway, who says, greetings from the cold and slightly socially awkward Norway. I stumbled upon your podcast whilst looking for something to listen to, and I just finished listening to the episode where you talk about whether your podcast would fit in with Nordic podcast listeners, and it really does. I've got a theory that the higher up in Europe you go, perhaps the more awkward we are, because I think like in the Mediterranean, people are very kind of outgoing and they show their emotions. And then you get to Finland and you know, there's long silences in that country that can last an entire winter.
Yeah, I'll buy that hypothesis, I think. Yeah.
So Tina continues. Well, at least to me, and I know I'm not the only socially awkward Norwegian around, I thought what better way to prove it than by telling you about the incident that happened literally half an hour after listening to it. So I was heading to the local shopping centre for an errand earlier tonight, and I thought I would make it there just in time before it closed. I was so pleased with myself having found a good parking spot. I hate parking in tight spots and would rather walk a mile than have trouble parking with lots of people around. And I walked towards the entrance. Just outside, I saw a group of those girly girls that makes me nervous. I mean, I'm thinking probably teenagers. And realised that I needed to pass them to enter. They kept looking at me as I approached, and I decided to look confident and picked up my pace as I got my determined face on, only to discover why they were standing in front of the door. The centre had closed almost an hour earlier. Now, not wanting to look like a complete idiot in front of girly girls, I tried to pretend like I was just checking out the closing times at the door whilst walking a bit too fast, desperately trying to look like I expected the doors to actually open. Continuing, I, of course, couldn't turn around and walk back past the girly girls again, so I proceeded to walk around the entire shopping centre's outside into a parking garage and up a floor to get back to my car without being seen by the girly girls. I got in my car and drove to the closest shop still open and bought a plant, as if that was a plan all along. It was not. She says, at least I got a story to send you guys. I've wanted to send one in for some time. None of the incidents that get me cringing years later pops into my mind when I actually need them, only when I desperately need to forget them at 2 a.m., for example. Do you have that kind of, is your inner monologue allowed in a monologue?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd be surprised if most people's inner monologue wasn't fairly loud. I mean, I'm constantly chatting away in my head, or part of me is chatting away, and I really feel for that kind of horrible situation where you feel like you have to save face and you're just panicking and you'll do anything and really go to some lengths, which Tina has done now.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminds me like the classics of those, I suppose, when you trip in the street and you pretend it's the start of your run.
Yeah.
My actual personal favorite you see a lot is when the tube is held at a station, but obviously as you're running down to get on it, you don't know that, so you absolutely hurtle into the carriage, and then you sort of gauge that everyone is entirely sedentary, and then have to try and make out that, like, I wasn't running actually, I was moving quickly, but I was certainly Not like I thought I was going to miss it. That's not what's happened at all here.
Which you're trying to convey entirely silently. Body language.
Through body language, which says, I'm totally relaxed about the fact that this is waiting and being held at this station for a while. And I knew that all along.
This one, they've asked to remain anonymous. They say, just listen to episode 10. I live in Skokie, Illinois, a village which has a high ratio of Jewish people. My neighbours are Orthodox, and I'm quite used to having to pop around Friday night or Saturday to assist with things they're unable to do on the Sabbath, even booking plane seats or hotels via the internet.
Hang on a minute. Is that allowed?
Well, this is the thing. This is actually a follow-up to something we were talking about before. There is my wife, who is Jewish, says the word is offensive, but there is a word goy for Gentiles.
Yeah.
And
the goyim. Yeah.
Yeah. A Shabbat goy is a Gentile who you get to do things for you on a Sabbath when you can't do them yourself. I mean, it doesn't seem to me to be following the spirit of the Torah, but you know, who am I to judge as a Gentile?
No. Well, as a potential Shabbat goy.
Yes.
I'd love to be a Shabbat guy.
Well, are you offering?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So give me a call.
This continues. I have an embarrassing story. It might not be fit for podcast. All right, we'll definitely have this then. Mm-hmm. I work as a doctor in the emergency room department at the local hospital and recently had to go up to one of our sister hospitals in Highland Park, Illinois, to provide holiday cover. Highland Park, coincidentally, is where my wife is from. Hmm. And it's where a lot of those John Hughes films were made. And Cameron's house from Ferris Bueller's Day Off is just round the corner from where my wife grew up.
Although Cameron as in with the Ferrari garage?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, I need to point out that it's this town full of very rich people, and I ended up with somebody who wasn't from that kind of background, and it's a constant source of annoyance to me.
Yeah.
Because like everybody in that town is inheriting millions, but not my wife. Anyway, this continues. I don't drive, so I had to take the Metra, which is the train over there, to Highland Park. Typically, when you're doing the emergency room, the trauma receptionist, if possible, will allocate you easier cases as you approach the end of your shift. So my last patient of the day was a man who had accidentally sat on a deodorant bottle. The cap had come off when he attempted to remove it and had been unable to retrieve the cap from his rectum. Fairly easy. You snap on the blue gloves, get the patient to bend over, put on a torch and get a very long set of forceps. Job done. Last week we were talking to Adam Kay, and he was saying this is a throbbing baseline of working in casualty. So everybody's got these stories from junior doctors and so on, but it's that common. It's happening every day.
And so people are just,
yeah,
just popping stuff up there.
Yeah,
and...
yeah, yeah. Annabelle's
never appealed to me, actually.
No, me either. But you know, I'm barely in midlife.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of time.
Exactly.
Yeah. A hobby for old age.
That on a model railway.
Well, I mean, they could go hand in hand. Where's that track leading? Don't worry about that.
The shift was over about half an hour later. Changed and headed off back to the station. Who do I see on the platform? Yep, the gentleman who only 40 minutes before I'd been gazing into the deep, dark recesses of his colon. We then spent an uncomfortable 10 minutes or so waiting for the train. The Metro was very full due to an open-air concert at Ravinia in the area. So we had to spend the journey from Highland Park to Evanston, which is just outside Chicago, in the same carriage, both of us trying not to catch the other's eye. I can only imagine he went to Highland Park because he didn't want to encounter anyone local and went up to the sister hospital in the hope of being anonymous. Normally, when you have a patient, they largely become faceless. But spending that much time with one, I now remember his face. I've spotted him around the local farmer's market once or twice. I may have to change markets. I mean, what do you do in that situation? Do you say hello?
I think you desperately try and develop whatever that face blindness condition is. That's what you need.
We would love to hear from you if you have any stories of that ilk, things which perhaps happened years ago and you're still waking up in a pang of anxiety in the middle of the night. Email us hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Time for Adrift with Annabelle Port and Jeff Lloyd. In whatever order makes sense to you, you are the one that is perceiving it.
So Rick has very graciously agreed to co-host this week, and the sort of original point of contact was because you have a new book out, which is based on the podcast Science-ish,
yes.
Which you do. Your co-host name again is...
Dr. Michael Brooks.
The good doctor.
Mm.
So you ever retrieved anything from...
Not that I'd like to talk about. Also, to be fair, his doctorate is in quantum physics. And I don't know as they do a lot of stuff sort of in colon.
Yeah. So the book is the Peculiar Science Behind the Movies, is the line. Tell me a bit about it.
Yes. Yeah, so it's very similar to the podcast, almost like we're just trying to cash in on the podcast by doing a book.
Maybe I could send all these listener emails off to a publisher.
I mean, honestly, why not?
Yeah.
Scroobius Pip did it.
Yes.
It's a thing to do these days. It turns out, one thing that we did notice is that we kind of had an idea that, so the premise of the podcast is we take a film and then we ask three big science questions that sort of arise within the film. We don't do much of that kind of myth busting that wouldn't work, because I find that stuff quite dull, and there's quite a lot of that online anyway. So we look at sort of where the real science is at the moment and talk about it and speak to experts.
I'm not particularly scientifically minded, and I guess it's ignorance is bliss for me a lot of the times when I'm watching a film. I think if you know about these things, then you start questioning them and looking at equations and stuff.
I mean, in all honesty, a lot of the questions we're asking are the questions that everyone comes out of the cinema asking when you come out of Planet of the Apes, you kind of go, I wonder if, you know, apes could ever get super smart and usurp us. And that's just a question of sort of evolution and niches and stuff like that. Or if you watch Ex Machina, you come out and go, well, I don't know, was that robot conscious? And that's, you know, the sort of one of the fundamental questions when we're, you know, in AI research, will consciousness ever emerge from silicon? And we don't know. Jurassic Park, obviously, you come out and you think, well, I wonder if there is some DNA in amber. No, degrades too quickly. But so they're all kind of quite they're quite obvious questions in a way.
It's and then a we shame just go to me the Jurassic detail. Park thing. I'd love to see a woolly mammoth.
Well, do you know what, Jeff? You are in luck, because the woolly mammoth, because the problem with dinosaurs is that they are all 65 million years or older, and the DNA would have degraded way too much, because the half-life of DNA is about 500 years. Whereas the last woolly mammoth died 4,500 years ago. Uh-huh. So relatively recent. Like, the woolly mammoths are not in any way contemporaries of dinosaurs. And there are two...
Hang on, I've seen the Flintstones. I feel like I've seen
the Flintstones,
cavemen, dinosaurs, and woolly mammoths.
Fast and loose, I'm afraid, with geological time periods. But there are two rival projects at the moment trying to resurrect the mammoth. One in Harvard, and one being run by literally a disgraced South Korean scientist.
Wow! This sounds like a film.
I'm genuinely tempted to try and write it as a film. It's great.
Yeah.
You kind of need to know what the outcome is. But they're both saying that they think they're going to have a mammoth next year in 2018.
A mammoth wool jumper.
Well, this is the thing. There's a whole host of options.
Are there non-woolly mammoths?
That's an excellent question. And I don't know. I'm going to say probably not, because they were living around a time when it's incredibly cold, so I think they would all have required the sort of woolly coat.
Woolly is a strange adjective to attach to it.
It is. But it's also, it makes them seem quite sort of approachable.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
Form an orderly bubble and off we go. Adrift.
Rick, you have something.
Yes. Well, just off the back of the awkward stories from listeners, a while ago, I went to, I think it was Goodwood, one of these sort of race events. It's one of these ones where you get invited by a brand and you just go along and they feed you and they give you drink and you're just there and you have a fine time. But there's also quite a strange mix of people. So I'd gone along with my best friend, and also in our sort of little box was Kelly Brook and Priya Kalidis, who is an actress and singer from EastEnders. And I think Priya and Kelly are friends. And we got chatting to Priya, and we were kind of talking about you know, what horses we were going to bet on. And she said, well, I'm just going to go with the one, the most Indian sounding one, obviously, and found one. And we were like, oh, okay, cool. And then she went off and put her bet on, and we put our bets on. And then about an hour later, we were all queuing up to put our bets on again. It was me and my best friend and Priya and Kelly. And we were just making some small talk. And I said to, who are you betting on this time? I imagine you're going for, and then I just looked at the program like, the Maharaja. And then there was an amazing sort of pause where my best friend and me, and to be fair, Priya, had the dawning realization that Kelly hadn't been there for the previous conversation. but what's really nice about it is that neither my best friend or Priya did anything. They were just so delighted what was about to happen. And sure enough, after a sort of pause of about 2 seconds, Kelly Brook just said to me, sorry, you've been racist. And I was like, no, let me. And that horrible, like, you could feel yourself sweating and just red face and just panic as you try and explain why you've just said to Priya Kalidis, I imagine you've gone for the Maharaja.
That's so good.
And also, I genuinely think that Kelly Brook probably didn't believe the explanation.
Right.
Because it just sounded a bit, because I was panicky.
Because it hardly, I think once you're in that situation, anything you say is going to sound a little fishy.
Yeah. Not bad. Not bad that Kelly Brook thinks I'm a racist, though.
I had an email from Sharon who says, I think I may have been the one person listening to your podcast in the Maldives as I was on holiday there last month.
A brag there, I think.
Well, we have you, because with your podcast, do you get the breakdown of where people are in the world listening to it?
No, I don't actually.
You see, this, I think this information is accessible, but you choose not to send yourself mad by looking at all the stats.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I feel like that's going to really have an adverse effect on my mental health.
So that solves that little mystery. Sharon also adds, I feel that I should point out, as a subscribing drifter, for which Annabelle bestowed on me the title of Grand Chancellor, I didn't steal adrift funds to pay for this unusual bout of luxury, and your coffers remain safe under my supervision. What this is we have a Patreon, which is a very modern form of begging.
Oh, yeah.
And for people who, I've not got the list in front of me, but it's, for what is a paltry amount in American dollars, I think it's $2 a month, we will bestow upon them a title. Annabelle is doling out like titles. All these people we've got as high sea lords, admirals, chancellors,
great.
And so
Grand
on.
Grand chancellors, good.
Yeah. So this
you
is.
You haven't got an imperial wizard, have you?
Well, it's no, the bad wizards, aren't they?
They're the ones you don't. You just a regular wizard, fine.
Yeah. If there's a word like grand or imperial, there's going to be some kind of problem.
There's worries. Yes. Yeah.
So if you would like to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/adrift.
Until we're all caught up pretending we know what we're doing, which we don't, obviously, it's quite apparent. Adrift.
So I've been doing this other podcast, Reasons to be Cheerful with Ed Miliband, and there's a little team of people who work on this. This is Rick is just sitting here in my loft with me, and you can see that this is very much a one-man band when Annabelle's not here. But the other one, Ed's got a couple of people who work with him who help out, and there's Emma who produces the show, and nobody's doing it for any money. So we took them out for dinner last night. And firstly, because we were with Ed Miliband, the chef came out.
Of course,
yeah. And he was very excited to have Ed there and had his picture taken. And we were taking our times with the menu. And he said, look, let me just sort it out for you. I'll pick out some things for you. So the first bit of awkwardness is when the bill came, I feel it was there were more items than if people had just ordered off the menu.
Mm-hmm.
But what could you do about that in that situation?
Yeah, you can't criticize the chef's selection, really, can you? Because he feels like he's doing you...
He's curated it.
He's doing you a solid.
Yes. So that was the first thing. But the second thing is one of the guys who works on the show, Alex, he put up a picture of us all on Facebook, his personal Facebook, and he's tagged me, and it's like this really terrible picture of me. I don't take a good picture in the first place because of how I look in real life, but like it's poor lighting. I've got a garden gnome like quality to me. We'd done Richard Herring's podcast, and Richard had said, and this stuck with me, that I look like Tim Allen in the Santa Claus as he's transitioning into becoming Santa Claus. And I think this is very much on display in the photograph. So
it's not a bad observation, is it?
Okay.
Yeah. I've recently rewatched the Santa Claus, so right. I've got it fresh in my head.
I was rather hoping you'd say, no, you don't look a bit like that, Jeff.
No, exactly. That's exactly what I meant. Very brief tangent, sorry. There is a YouTube clip where someone has recut the Santa Claus as a horror film, and it is absolutely phenomenal. It's so good. It's so creepy.
Did you ever see someone did that with the opening credits to Different Strokes?
No, but I can see that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's really
But
good.
I'm going to go and watch that. Go and watch Santa Claus as a horror.
So my question becomes, like, is it acceptable for me to untag myself on Facebook because I don't like the photo?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I've definitely done it. I think it's fine.
But then he's gone to the effort of putting this thing up, and we had a good night, and he wanted to put a social media post. Do I look like I'm being big-headed in some way? I don't know. So that's what I'm investigating in this week's The Incident. I started out by trying to talk to my co-host from the other podcast, Ed Miliband, who had the Prime Ministership of the UK snatched from him after being photographed eating a sandwich in an ungainly manner. I just wondered, as somebody who has had bad photographs of themselves...
Can't think what you're talking about, yeah?
Plastered all over the newspapers. What is the best way of dealing with it?
I don't know. Let me know if you find out.
You've just got to let your personal vanity go.
What's the bad photo of you?
It's not flattering. I think I look a little...
Well, the one with Axelrod.
No, the one of us on our team night out, I think that the lighting is a little harsh for my face.
I didn't think the Axelrod was very flattering either.
Well, thank you. Now you're making me feel even worse about myself.
I showed Justine the Axelrod one, and she's like, he looks like a complete dog. She said, he looks much better than that. Why has he got that ridiculous smile on his face? So I was like having this ridiculous thing with Alex where I was saying, well, I think that Justine thinks he looks like a dork.
Somebody who's been at the receiving end of criticism for how they look in photos.
No, but it wasn't me that was thinking it was Justine was just like going on.
Well, that didn't really get me anywhere. So I talked to Greg, who's a picture editor at a national newspaper. What if you've had a photographer out at like a red carpet event, a premiere or something like that? And let's just pluck a famous person from out of thin air. What about Leslie Joseph?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Leslie Joseph's on the red carpet, and you get from your photographer, you get a roll of, say, 50 different photographs. And in some of them, she's got like a weird half facial expression because, I don't know, she's moving her mouth or she's yawning or something. Do you ever deliberately pick unflattering photos?
Not necessarily. If it's something on the picture, so I'll be quite, you know, frank with you. Say it is Leslie Joseph, it could be a peg. Birds of a Feather could be coming back on the BBC. Basically, what we'd do here on the night, say a premiere, it'd come in and we'd say, oh my God, look at Leslie Joseph, we haven't seen her for ages. Doesn't she look well? And doesn't she look like Dorian from 1982 when we all used to watch it?
Right.
It all depends on who it is, really.
Yeah.
So you get Joan Collins on the red carpet looking fabulous, but then there's moments where certain people don't look too fabulous. But
is it like you've got an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other saying, use the really nice photograph, Greg, or use the one which makes them look old?
It is discussed. We do discuss it, but deep down we'd never do anything just to say, oh, look at that, or derogatory towards that person.
But what about like someone like my friend Ed Miliband? So there's that famous picture of him eating the bacon sandwich. So presumably that's from a camera roll of pictures, and there'd be pictures on either side which look perfectly normal. Are you looking for the one that's going to make him look the biggest freak?
Well, when that came in, as you say, a non-Labour supporting paper during a big political sort of time, I'd say, you know, if you can mock the opposition in a way, if we took 10 pictures of you eating a bacon sandwich, I reckon one of them would look like that anyway. Most of us would, wouldn't
yeah.
we?
Yeah, especially since I'm like vegetarian. That. I think all of the ones would look like that of me.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Get your veggie bacon sandwich. And you'd have you looking a bit gormless when you're chewing your food. Anyone would be.
Do you ever have, like, publicists or managers, like, going mental about pictures you've printed because they're not flattering?
Once in a while, I must admit, you don't really get the subject or... Well, you don't get the subject ringing up at all, but you sometimes over the years, I can't say whom, but you do get people saying, why did you do that? That wasn't very nice. We wouldn't mind if we did it to you. And then some say, well, we're not in the public light all the time. You know, if you're going to go on the red carpet, or if you're going to go to a nightclub, if you're going to take the big check for the big BBC drama, you're going to be photographed, and sometimes it's not. You've got to go. It's the rough of the smooth, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't if you don't want to be photographed, don't leave the house. Live like a hermit.
Exactly.
So exactly. What should I do then? Should I untag myself in this photo or not?
No, just leave it because that's the way you are, isn't it?
Thanks a bunch,
you're
Brad.
Not too bothered. Just leave it. That's you. Everyone knows you for what you are. But if you do look a bit of a buffoon, so what? There's loads of celebs and people and politicians and film stars have all been there. You just joined the list.
Melinda Messenger is a TV host, former model, and trainee psychotherapist. I told her about my dilemma.
That's a huge thing, isn't it? It's a huge thing because you're sort of like, it's your ego battling you every which way, isn't it? Because it's like your ego goes, I don't want that. I don't want people seeing that picture of me. But then do I make it worse by drawing attention to it, by acknowledging the fact that I don't want people looking at it?
Yeah, and I don't want to come across as the sort of person who would be bothered about a bad photo on Facebook, but it's really eating away at me.
Yeah, I get it. I know, I totally get it. Totally get it.
Someone who's been photographed a lot. Like, would that happen to you all the time? You'd go to some event and then you'd pick up a magazine and it'd be like what you perceive to be a very unflattering photograph.
Yeah, all the time. It's a complete minefield. So, you know, my way of coping with it is just don't look at the pictures because, you know, in the sort of public arena, you know, it's beyond your control. And yeah, on Facebook, you've got a little bit of power, haven't you? Because at least you can pop it through a little filter, you know, choose the picture that you like, choose the one that's the most flattering and put that out there. But you've got no say.
And it's especially frustrating on Facebook because I suppose what we're doing on there is trying to present the best versions of ourselves to the world. I mean, that's what everyone's up to on social media.
Of course it is. It's completely edited, you know, through our kind of filter of how we want to be seen, you know, even down, like you say, even down to the sort of analysing it. What will people think of me if, you know, how does this put me across? I've kind of gotten to the point now where I care a little bit less about it. Doesn't mean my ego still doesn't like it. It flares up.
How did you get there?
How did I get there? Just by resigning myself to the fact, well, that's how it is. It's not going to be any different. And also that kind of the sort of realization, nobody really cares how bad I look in that picture. I care, but it's, you know, but in the scheme of things, does it really matter?
It's almost like you're saying that all these things I obsess about constantly, nobody's interested in. And if I could just let them go, I'd be living a happier life.
You'd be freeing yourself off of a massive, massive hook if you could. Yeah, because that's it. I mean, do people really care? Does anyone else really care? You know, you might go, ooh, that wasn't flattering. Mm. But let's face it, we all know, we all understand how easy it is. I mean, God, I've accidentally taken selfies on my phone, genuine accidentally. You know, when you think you're taking a picture of something else. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I look like a 90-year-old woman. What happened? You know, and it's like, there's no way on earth I'd want people to see them for my ego's sake. But you know that everybody can get caught in a bad light sometimes. Everyone's going to have a dodgy picture, and so if you can stop beating yourself up, yeah, what a relief. Or antidote it by taking 100 really nice ones of yourself.
I don't know. I mean, I think it could take me months to get 100 nice ones of myself.
This is warm and friendly, and you like it, and that's why you're here.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You were the one that pressed play after all, with your thumb.
Adrift, with Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
You have a lovely thumb.
This email comes from David in Hastings, who says, I feel compelled to email you about holding doors open for other people, an experience I find horribly awkward, especially when there are a series of doors. Every day, I need to walk through four sets of doors on the way from my car in a multi-story to my place of work. My biggest fear is that when I approach the first set of doors, there'll be either someone just behind me or just in front of me. If someone's just in front of me, then I feel like I need to keep pace with them, but not too close, so that I'll be near enough to them that when they dutifully hold the door open for me, it gets awkward. But if I'm too slow, they'll usually do that thing where they hold the door open at a long stretch as if to demonstrate the effort they're going into in order to do this for me. I'm still not sure if I should say thank you for each set of doors they hold open. So far, I've settled saying thank you for the first and the last set. I think that's a good policy.
I think that's first a great policy.
First and last.
Yeah.
Even worse is that if I have to hold each set of doors open for someone just behind me, I have to make sure I slow my pace down so it doesn't look like I'm running away. On occasion, to avoid awkwardness, I've walked needlessly fast to reach the next door so I'm far enough away that I don't need to hold it open again. Having endured this excruciating experience at least twice a week for the past 6 years, I've now decided that the best plan of action is to hide in a public toilet situated just after the first set of doors until the coast is clear. It is a minefield, that one.
It's thorny. It's one of this age's great questions.
Yeah.
And I do, I mean, I have to say, I think that the thank you at the first and last is good. I think that's strong. Mm. I mean, the absolute safest is you just say thank you for everyone and you feel like a bit of a goon, but you're a very polite goon. And then if you're the one doing the opening, I really, it's one of my pet peeves when people don't say thank you. I can't abide it.
So I'm a very placid, non-confrontational person, but if somebody doesn't say thank you, I can go from naught to... Somebody doesn't say thank you, somebody doesn't accept a sorry. Those are my triggers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will go, oh, you're welcome. I mean, I think I'm doing it that loud, but I'm probably just going, you're welcome, like that, passive-aggressively.
No, but I think the you're welcome is... It's good. It's very... British, isn't it? Because I suspect you are whispering that.
Yeah. I feel like I'm yelling.
But it drives me up the wall. I can't understand why people wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
Even in the car, if people don't do the little light flash or the little, like, raise the hand up from the steering wheel when you let them go.
Yeah, I've been in cars where, because I'm not a driver, so I'm often the passenger, and I've been in cars where people haven't thanked, and I've felt the need to do it for them as a passenger because of...
Oh, I do that, yeah. Yeah. I think that's absolutely fine.
If you know where you're going, it doesn't matter if the location... is going in that same direction because you're already making the move. Jeff Lloyd, Annabelle Port, are adrift.
Rick, before I let you go, some more questions. And now, on your website, you say that your mental arithmetic is impeccable. This is on your own website, written by you, presumably.
Yeah, I'm immediately thinking, yeah, you're right, I have got a website. I don't think I've updated that for around 5 years. I should look into that.
Yeah, social media has replaced websites and whatever. Are you, when you go out for a meal with friends, are you the one who's expected to work out the bill?
Well, it's quite interesting that, because I will often commandeer that job. Because now people just always have it on their phone, so there's no need for anyone to do it in their head. But I will still insist on doing it in my head, or I'll do it in my head and then get it verified, and then people are impressed.
Because you would presumably, before calculator phones were the thing, I mean, some people have calculator watches, but few and far between.
Old data bank.
You had a high status in the group of diners because you were able to do this, and this has been taken from you.
Yeah, but I'm still I'm still clinging on to it. That's my point. I don't think anyone wants me to.
What sort of a tipper are you?
really depends where I am, actually. I think I'm a pretty solid 10% man.
Okay. Do you ever drop beneath 10%?
Yeah, if the service has been bad. But of course, that absolutely doesn't wash in America. In America, it's it's almost nothing to do with the quality. It's just, it's a mandatory 15%.
20.
Europeans
have a bad reputation in America for tipping 15%.
I was there recently and I was doing 15.
Yeah, yeah, they would have been bad-mouthing you. 20 is the norm now.
20 is, I mean, that's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah,
but then they're getting paid so little, I suppose. Yeah. Oh, I feel bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So you are actually basing the tip on the quality of the service?
Yeah, I think so. Because that feels, in this country, that feels like what you should be doing.
So I'm basing my tip on wanting them to like me.
Right.
You don't have any of that, do you?
No. So there's a sort of air of desperation about your tipping, isn't
there? Yeah, very much. I sometimes use it to compensate for the bad small talk I've had with the people working in the restaurant, because I don't have an easy way about me, but I'm eager to be liked, and those two things are a bad combination.
Costing you quite a lot of money in tips. Jeff's given a 50% tip again. Terrible chat earlier with the maitre d'.
Are you a good small talker?
I think I'm okay at it, but then I sort of imagine that you are as well.
I'm bad.
But your profession is chatting nonsense, and that's what small talk is.
It's in a very confined environment. Do you have anywhere where you are a regular?
I was a regular. This doesn't cover me in glory particularly. I was a regular in Nando's for a long time, to the extent that I wouldn't, in Kentish Town, and I wouldn't really need to give my order. I'd walk in and they'd be like, cool,
we'll bring it over.
Yeah, which is sort of one of the reasons I had to kind of rein that in. And then not really any, like, I've got a few pubs where, like, I'll say hello to the bar staff in a way that.
But then where are you going with it? You're going, whether are you going? Because you're a sports guy, so you've always got the sports to go for.
Sport is helpful. But I don't.
Would there be any way, as it comes.
I don't think I have any stock ins.
Okay. So I was going to ask, as a sports person, is there any cheats you could give me that I could go? Because I sometimes like people.
But I think you're going to get found out, right? Though, because if you're sort of dropping a football reference in.
Mm.
And then the person really takes it and runs with it, and then you're left floundering. I think that's worse.
Yeah. Because I find myself just hoping that all the teams have a nice time.
Yeah.
That tends not to be good sports
really
banter.
Beautiful attitude, but it's not really what football fans are after. Because the reality of what as a Liverpool fan, what I want is Liverpool to be having a nice time and then everyone else to be utterly miserable.
Right.
That's my preferred state.
If this makes you feel good, I think Liverpool had some kind of victory the other day, because I was on the London Underground just after it happened.
Yes.
And the fans were having a very nice time.
Yeah.
And everybody else in the carriage was miserable, myself included. And quite afraid.
Yeah.
The Second World War was evoked for no good reason.
I'm sorry. I think that, I mean, football fans, I love football fans. Can be very boisterous. And they can, I think they can get their references a bit off sometimes.
My wife, she is American, and we live quite close to where Arsenal play. So often she'll be coming home and have to sort of encounter Arsenal fans. Mm. And she thinks there is, she's not talking about violence, but an aggressiveness in the chanting that doesn't exist in the same way for American teams. And my theory on this is it's to do with the climate here. To be a fan of a sports team here is an act of endurance. Mm.
You need to be a bit hardier.
Yeah, you've been through a lot just to be a fan. Where it's, I think it's more celebratory over there.
It's very curious. I don't know if you've ever been to watch any American sports, but the consumption of American sports by American sports fans feels very different to, well, particularly football fans. So football fans, I become possessed when I watch Liverpool. When I'm watching it on TV, and particularly when I'm actually at a game. And there's a sort of frenzied madness and a lot of sort of outpouring of hatred, I have to say, towards the opposition,
rage,
towards the referee. Yeah. And then you go and watch sport in America, And people are sort of having a nice time.
Right.
Like they're just having a good day out. They're having a drink. They're having some food. They're having a chat. It's more like watching cricket. Right. Here.
So how much does that or doesn't that apply to football around the rest of Europe or the world?
I think it's very similar all around the world with football. And I don't know why that is.
So I remember going to, they sent me, the radio station sent me to Euro 2004 in Portugal as a not for a month as a non-football fan, which was very boring for me. And I felt guilty because I was getting these great seats at all these games that I had no interest in watching. But we were in Lisbon, and it seemed to me that the England fans in particular, they look for the kind of biggest open space in the city and then occupy it with as many flags as possible and as many naked torsos as possible. It's like the largest amount of flesh on display, and it was large flesh by any standards.
A lot
of bellies.
That's the that's pretty much the drill with watching. I mean, in fairness, I wouldn't even really call myself an England fan. Like, I find it quite hard to get on board with that stuff. And I wouldn't go abroad to watch England play, because I think that you're bracketing yourself with a certain type of fan that I try to avoid. But I am sort of that fan when it comes to my team.
Right, so there's a Jekyll and Hyde quality.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, there really is. I mean, actually, do you know what? To thoroughly disprove what I've just said, in Euro 2004, I was on holiday with my friends in Biarritz in France. And we were all, God, this is awful, actually. We were all in fact, there's a really terrible, you probably can't, I'll do both halves of this story. And I think you probably won't want to use the second half.
Because it reflects poorly on you.
It's sort of awful. Okay. Yeah, but I'll tell you, and you just see how you feel about it. We were playing Portugal in the quarterfinals. Me and my friends are all wearing England shirts, so immediately mark ourselves out as terrible people. we're watching it in a sort of open air cafe, and what is happening is that all of the, it's mainly French people there. They're all supporting Portugal because they just, like, people don't like us.
Yeah.
And so we're sort of slightly getting baited by the other people in the cafe. And there's a group of girls who I think are French, who are supporting Portugal quite loudly. And they're really, and when Portugal scored, they really celebrated. It felt like they were sort of directing it at us. And it was, I could feel myself really like just getting really mad. And then England scored. And rather than sort of celebrate with my friends, I just turned round, and I can't even say what I bellowed, but I basically bellowed at these girls, "How do you like that, you?" And then some stream of invective, and then had to just like sit down and go, "What's just happened? Why have I done that? Why have I just screamed at some girls?" Like, and it's a horrible thing to feel in yourself. And that's the first half, the okay half of the story. The second half of the story is that we lost that game, and me and my friends were, it was our last night on holiday, and it was very bleak. And we wanted to go out, but the spirits were very low. And we went and got changed out of our England shirts, and then we sort of plodded back out to go and find a club or whatever, just with no enthusiasm. And I thought, I need to do something here to G up the troops.
Yeah.
Like I need to, you know, fire everyone up.
So you did some of your mental arithmetic.
Yeah, and I just thought they would
impress them with feats of mental arithmetic.
And we'd been... Every day, and I thought, I don't think anyone else has noticed this. Every day we've been walking past this food van, and there was a large Alsatian sitting outside, presumably belonged to the owner. And the whole time, every time we saw it, it was always licking its own genitals. and we were approaching this food truck, and I said to the lads, this will cheer you up. I guarantee I can get that dog to lick its own dick. And I went over to the, and they're all, and to be fair, their interest was piqued. And I went over to the dog and sort of was stroking the dog. And then the dog kind of got up. And then this is really, and there's photographic evidence of this, which is terrible. I just a sort of reached around and just gave, and just like gently just tapped. Well, there's no other way of putting it. I gently just tapped the dog on its dick, and sure enough, the dog got straight down and started licking it. And I went away celebrating. My friends were absolutely delighted, and we went away and had a good night. But the fact remains, I have in one night screamed at a group of girls that I don't know, and then tapped a dog on its penis.
Oh, I can't think why you thought that was an inappropriate story. That's really quite wonderful. Both the book and the podcast are science-ish. And Impossible's on the telly if people want to watch that. Anything else while we're here?
No, I think that's probably a lot. Impossible seems to be on all of the time. 2:15, BBC One.
Just before Warwick Davis.
Yes. Very fine show.
Rick, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jack.
And that's our podcast. Thanks for listening and downloading. If you haven't shared your story of your social ineptitude with me and your fellow drifters yet, email hello@adriftpodcast.com. I am, as I keep saying, relying on you to keep the quality up while Annabelle's away. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music, and if you're looking for something festive to do in December, they are playing at the 1965 Records Christmas Party at the Windmill in Brixton on the 13th, that's Brixton in London, and they're such a great live band, you've got to go and see them, I insist. Thanks to Emily Harrison for the incidental music during the incident, and to this week's advisors, the Right Honourable Ed Miliband MP, Greg Bennett and Melinda Messenger. Vince Lynch and Simon Wilcox made our idents. Patrick Gunning and Iwana Babu provided technical support. Carla Gowlett took the photos and Kim Rainey designed our artwork. It really helps us out if you rate and review the show if you're an iTunes user. And actually, no matter how you listen, iTunes or not, it really, really helps us out if you give us money. Patreon.com/drift. Thanks to Rick Edwards for being such a wonderful guest host. His book is called Science-ish, the peculiar science behind the movies, and so is his podcast, which is also excellent. And finally, thanks to that dog in France for rising to the occasion.
Adrift.
Adrift.
All right, on to the podications. Once again, with the disclaimer that these are in a right old mess because Annabelle usually organises them and I lack admin skills. So apologies if yours has somehow fallen through the cracks. I'm trying to get them in order. And I think if there was a date in the subject line or somewhere obvious, I have included it here. So let's see how we get on. I've also printed these out in such a small font that I should really have a magnifying glass to read them, but we'll see how we get on. First one comes from our friend Joseph Gorsey, who says, "Hello, Jeff and Annabelle," or Annabelle stand-in. Actually, it's just me. I'm recording this after Rick left. Anyway, hello, Joseph writes. "I'm not sure how your recording schedule works, so I hope I'm not too late already." You're not. "I'd like to request a publication on Wednesday, the 15th of November, for my son Gabriel, as it will be his first birthday on Saturday." Can't believe that. That's flown by. I remember the sort of build-up to this on the old radio show, and now here we are, a year later. Nice little story arc for you if you are a long-time listener. Knowing that Gabriel is doing well. He's got more teeth coming through. This annoys me. He's taken his first few steps whilst holding onto the settee. I'm saying it annoys me, only because of how advanced Gabriel clearly is compared to my son Gene, who I think wasn't doing that till about 14 or 15 months. What else? Sorry, I've got to squint again. And he loves a button, particularly the on-off button on the TV and the shirt buttons. Can't believe it's been a year already, but at the same time, I can't believe it's only been a year. Yep, I understand that feeling. But I won't go on too much because I know people don't like baby talk from me. I think they're fine with it from you, Joseph, but I think it annoys people from me if I do it too often. By baby talk, I don't mean talking like a baby. Speak like a child. Here we go. Gabriel is a very slow eater. See, Gene's a very fast eater. He's very advanced with that. So we started listening to the podcast as a family when we're all together feeding him his lunch or tea. Though, unfortunately, with my work, that has been less often recently. Whilst he likes a drift, he gets a little grumpy when we play Reasons to be Cheerful, particularly when Ed's on. I think Gabriel considers it cheating on Annabelle. Yeah, I don't know what Annabelle thinks. I'll have to... you know what Annabelle's like. She wouldn't tell me. She'd bottle it up, even if she did feel like I was being podcasty unfaithful. What else? It's his first birthday. I've got to be honest, if I sound a bit weird, like I'm talking like that, I've just... an ulcer has just popped up on my tongue. So it's my tongue now feels like it's slightly too big for my mouth, like this old Jamie Oliver thing. So that's what's going on here. So if I do sound a bit like that, that's why. It's his first birthday, so we're spoiling him a bit. We got him presents in addition to a podication. I mean, that is spoiling, really. The podication would have been ample. And he's going to have a little party on Saturday. I hope he has a great time and a good year ahead. Joseph Gorsey and Liz too. Well, Gabriel, I'm sure you will not only hear, but I'm sure you will comprehend this one day. And it will be mystifying to you why your dad makes you and your mum listen to this podcast, I'm sure. Anyway, lots of love to you three. And I'm sure Annabelle would send hers too if she were here. Let's have a look what else. This next one I've printed out even smaller. Who does it come from? Great, I haven't printed out who it's from. This is amazing. Not quite sure what to do here. I wonder if in real time I can go into the Adrift email account and try and figure out who this publication is from. Hang on a second. Bear with me. It starts, that's the first line. I thought I put... Okay, I think I can get there. Yeah, it's from Reese. There we go. That wasn't too excruciating, was it? What do you mean it was? It comes from Reese, who says, I thought I'd put finger to keyboard to congratulate you both on finding your ticket out of that hellhole you were in, but that feels too much like praise. So I'll just say I've listened to every podcast in its entirety so far and infer from that what you will. I'm writing in to request a third podication for my wife, Christina. I only make reference to the running tally in a hope it'll prompt her to reciprocate the gesture. You might recall, though I have absolutely no anticipation you would, but I'm the socially clueless Welshman who included Jamaican patois in a previous podcast in a misguided, though nonetheless loving exhibition of cultural appropriation, and whose then fiancé, unbeknownst to me, sent a lifeguard to watch after me whilst I kayaked to avoid any wedding day disasters. This is all familiar. It's so familiar, in fact, I'm worried that I read this publication out 2 weeks ago and it's just, and my memory has not retained it for whatever reason. It's only retained bits of detail. But anyway, let's not get bogged down in that. Let's see. Well, I lived, and we've now been married a year, but if I'm honest, I'd all but given up on one crucial element I tried to place at the epicentre of our marriage. But whilst on the London Underground yesterday, my wife clocked a man pressing the open door button and she made reference to your call for standardisation across all trains. It's taken a year of courtship, 4 months of engagement and a year of marriage, but I finally ground her down so far that she is now listening to your podcast. I just punched the air there. I don't know if you heard the swoosh of the air. Granted, it was while she was captive in the car, while we spent the last month exploring her homeland, but still, she's hit a new low and I'm in marital bliss. Congratulations. You've dragged her down to our level. We both enjoyed the live show earlier this year and look forward to your thing next week, Jeff. Oh, did you come to that? Now I'm getting confused. I'm really worried that I read this out for you. Anyway, if I did, it's nice. It's a test to see if she's still listening. All the best with the drift. I'm still listening after 14 years, so you're either doing something right or I'm more afflicted than I am willing to concede. I suspect it's the latter, but I'll take it. Patreon and the mandatory 5-star review to follow. Finally, and most importantly, congratulations on your pregnancy, Annabelle. Well, as we all know, she's not pregnant anymore. She is a mother of Rudy. I'm trying to remember when I last talked to you, when I last recorded a show. So I'd been round. Anyway, when Annabelle comes back, we can talk about some of the things that happened. But all doing well in Snaresbrook near London, where Annabelle lives. Right, mustache to stock up on space ice cream. Best wishes, Reese. It was good publication up until that point, Reese. And yet again, I've failed to print out the name of the person who sent this one, so bear with me. It is Simon Moore, who says, I'd like to request a publication for my wife, Abby. She has been a long-time listener of the show, and I would often come home from work to find her listening to your radio show whilst cooking dinner. She couldn't wait for your podcast and now is an avid listener. This is good to know. I'm waiting for the backlash. Is it coming? Simon writes, I recently changed my job and we now work from home, both of us. We have a small home office and our desks are less than a meter apart, which can be interesting. The upshot is that she now has got me hooked on your podcast and we often sit very close together, both tapping away on our laptops whilst listening. This is lovely. This is a template for marital bliss here. I'd like to thank her for letting me share an office space with her and for being a brilliant wife and mother. Hopefully this will make it onto your podcast and she will be bowled over to hear it. Well, there we go. I'm hoping that I did everybody who wanted one this week. And apologies if I've ended up missing somebody and then reading ones out that I read out a few weeks ago because I have no short, mid, or long-term memory. So there we go. Latest edition of the podcast is podicated to Gabriel, 1 year old, from Joseph and Liz. Also, from Reese to Christina, and from Simon to Abby. That's the latest edition of the podcast. And if you would like a podication, you can email hello@driftpodcast.com. And I don't know what next week's podcast is going to be yet because I am going to be in the United States for Thanksgiving with my in-laws. So it's possible it will be a mother-in-law special or maybe it won't be. Who knows? That all remains to be seen.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.